Live and local, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having an opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
One our score. Saul Garza, first pitch launched high in the air to left field, going back and watching it go is Reeves, and Garza with his second home run of the season, second in his career, give the Tigers a 2-1 lead on the first pitch offered up here in the top of the third inning. 2-1 LSU.
Good morning, Acadiana. This is RP3 and Company on 103.7 The Game. I'm your host, Raymond Parson III. Cody Schutz is manning the ones and twos as always. And we're going to get your weekend started off on the right foot live right here from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. 24 hours of sports coverage. If you want to give us a call today, pick up the phone, dial 337-706-0111. That is the ARCO equipment hotline. We have some great stuff lined up for you today. Third hour, Tyler Nunez, who always joins us on Fridays from Tiger Rag. He's going to give us his thoughts on the Will Wade situation at LSU. Also, some football recruiting news. We'll also have live in studio, he is the public address announcer at Evangeline Downs. Michael Chamberlain will be joining us live in studio. He's going to give us his thoughts on the Kentucky Derby, which, by the way, is this Saturday, and you can listen to it live right here on 103.7 The Game. Pre-race coverage begins at 4 o'clock, gate around 5:45 local time. We also have our good friend Barry Herstis of the Saints News Network and Big Easy Magazine. We haven't had a chance to talk to Barry yet about his thoughts on the Saints draft. I bet he's going to be enthused and happy about it. So we'll get his thoughts on that. And then coming up to start off the second hour at 7:02, we finally going to have them. Third time's going to be a charm. Third time's going to be a charm.
I can guarantee it.
Nick Suss from the Clarion Ledger is going to give us the Ole Miss perspective for this weekend's huge series at Alex Box Stadium between Ole Miss and LSU baseball. Plus RPOs with RP3 and my rant of the week. That said, let's start things off with LSU baseball. You don't want to overhype something by any stretch of the imagination. But this weekend series is huge. And it's huge for a multitude of reasons for Paul Maneri and his bunch. A, or one, if you want to go letters or numbers, hey, I can adjust. We'll see if putting Zach Hess in the bullpen is the right decision. Because here's the thing. At first glance, you're like, yeah, this makes sense. He has struggled as a starter. He's been inconsistent. He has great stuff, but he has stuff that's more tailored for the bullpen, right? He's even come out and said that he's never felt that he is a starter. He said that this week when the decision was made that he was not going to be the Friday night starter this week and that he was going to be pushed to the bullpen. his best performance as a pitcher even this year was against Georgia, where he pitched lights out, and he even said then he didn't feel as confident as he did when he was a freshman in the bullpen. So he has a relief pitcher closer's mentality. He's fought it. He's tried to not be that guy, but at the end of the day, he is Wild Thing. And Paul Maneri's dude, which we look back now and say that he kind of forced into trying to be the Friday night starter, is in fact better suited for the bullpen. That's where he's projected to be at the next level, through the minor league farm systems, and if he gets to the majors. I agree with that. I agree with that wholeheartedly. One problem, though. You're asking him to go from a starter to a relief pitcher in the month of May. His confidence has been rattled a little bit by this year in his performance. He's going to have to make an adjustment. I don't care how good or talented he is or how good that coaching staff is. It's not simply, okay, Zach, go be in the bullpen. It's not how it works. So I'm interested to see if that's going to start paying off for the Tigers immediately. I think it's going to take a little while. I think you're going to have to figure out how that bullpen is going to work. Is it going to be Zach Hess eating up a couple of innings, being at the front end of the of a relief situation, and then you bring in Todd Peterson for an inning, and then Fondo can close it out?
I like it. I like it sort of the other way. I like if we're okay. going if we have the three guys being Peterson, Fondo, and
those are your three guys Zach that are going to be the bullpen.
And if we're talking about in an ideal situation, innings 7, 8, and 9, then me personally, I would probably like to go Peterson, Fontenot, Hess.
So even though you've seen Fontenot do very well in the closer role this year, you would think Hess is the better closer.
I would look at it this way. As of late, we've seen Devin Fontenot struggle as much as we've seen him struggle this season, as of late. Now,
That's fair.
He still got the win on Sunday, you know, after things got a little touch and go there for a minute against Bama.
But yeah, he got a little hairy.
Right, but he still got the win, nice strikeout to end the game and all that. He undoubtedly has been your best pitcher on the back end of games so far this season, but with him being a little unsure lately, and just a little, and then with Zach Hess finally knowing that he's in the bullpen no matter what's going to happen, I would maybe try to see if I can't use that as, I hate the term spark plug, but some kind of to light a fire under Zach Hess. And then the first time you bring him out of the bullpen, really give him that true, you know, Ricky Wild Thing Vaughn treatment and have him come out in the ninth inning and run to the mound. And you need three outs to win the game and go see what you can do, kid. I mean, I think that's what I would like to see. But again, we've all seen Zach Hess go out in the first inning of a game he started and give up three runs. So
that's my concern. He's going to have to quickly find his confidence, and he's not going to have inferior competition to get his confidence back against. Once again, Ole Miss is tied with them for third in the SEC right now. There's a lot on the line. LSU wants to get a top four seed. That's my second point about why this is such a big series is top four seed for the SEC tournament does not have to play the single elimination first round games. If you're LSU, Cody, you want to avoid that.
Right.
Okay.
Purely just for pitching.
Exactly. You want to play less games to be able to win the SEC. Now, once again, Paul Maneri does such a good job, right, with this team where they put all that they're laser focused when it comes to the SEC tournament, right? This is a big series in those standings because they're running out of SEC games before Hoover. They got this weekend against Ole Miss. They have two midweek games, Tech and UNO. They have to go to Arkansas next weekend. Cody brought up on the show earlier this week their struggles on the road. If they drop a series at home to Ole Miss, what is that going to do? That's going to drop them in the standings, and then they're going to have to scratch and claw their way through the SEC tournament.
I mean, that's obviously not what you want to see. So, again, I did this yesterday, kind of the game within the games, if you will, this weekend series. I asked you this last week during RPOs, and I think we were both kind of wrong how we leaned towards. We both thought Friday night last weekend for LSU would go much better. They would get out from behind that eight ball at the start of a series. No, we were wrong. They still won the series, but that's not how it went down. This weekend at home, I'll come up with something new for RPOs today. So let me ask you now, does LSU, what does this Friday night game look like? Because this is not a series where, you know, you can
think. They can't afford to drop the Friday night game.
I've been saying that for a few weeks now, but I really feel like it's true.
Ole Miss is not Alabama. Now, I know history is not on the Tiger. History is actually on the Tiger side. Ole Miss has not won a series in Baton Rouge since the early 80s. I'm not for sure what the years. I know it was well before you were born, Cody.
Wow.
Okay? So they have always traditionally struggled playing at Alex Box Stadium. Old Alex Box, new Alex Box. Okay? They just can't. And Ole Miss has their own challenges because they have to play Mississippi State still, too, to end up their regular season. So
and they just played Mississippi State in the midweek, too.
So Zach Hess being moved out of the rotation. The guy that they want to be in that role is Henry, but once again, he still has arm soreness. There's going to be a book written about this season of arm soreness for the LSU baseball team.
It's starting to feel like that's code for something.
So they feel that the back end of their starting rotation is set, with Walker and Marceau pitching better on the back end Saturday, Sunday. They want Henry to be the Friday guy, but he's got arm soreness. So it's going to be Mikael Hilliard tonight. And Mikael, at first glance, you're like, hey, you know what? I remember Mikael Hilliard. He pitched really good last year as a freshman. You're right, he did. This is not last year. Mikael's 0-2 on the year with an ERA of almost 5. And that's the guy they're putting out there tonight at Alex Box Stadium.
He's due for a good performance.
He's due for a good performance.
That's what I'm going with.
And he's going up against a team that always struggles when they come to Baton Rouge. This is a veteran-laden Rebels team.
Keep talking to me. You're making me feel better. He's going up against a team that sucks at Baton Rouge. He's due for a good performance.
He's facing off against the junior, Will Etheridge, who's 5-3 on the year with an ERA of sub-3.
He's getting very little run support.
50 strikeouts.
He must be getting very little run support.
Yeah.
To have that low of an ERA and be 5-3.
And here's your rest of your weekend matchup. Walker, of course, will go Saturday for LSU. He's 3-3 now. His ERA is 4.99. He'll go up against the freshman lefty, Doug Nick Hazy. 5-3, ERA 3.44, 55 strikeouts. Ole Miss has pitchers that like throwing strikeouts. Okay, now that could be a good thing, though, for a murderer's row lineup like LSU's. You know, a great hitter wants to hit strikes, right? And they can hit strikes really well. It's not like Ole Miss is, you know, crafting.
If Eric Walker's ERA is at 4.99, that's got to be down from the what must have been like 16 or something like that at one point. Because, I mean, he's been pitching very well lately, and his ERA is still 5.
Yeah, and look, Ole Miss is a veteran-laden team, and it'll be interesting to see. I feel like this is going to be a series. It's not going to be a sweep. I feel like this is going to be a series that's going to have to come down to Sunday with Marceau. But once again, look, if moving Zach to the bullpen helps them, maybe they take this approach, Cody. Maybe here's the silver lining for it all. maybe you're saying, okay, our starting pitching is not the best. We have guys with ERAs around 4 to 5. They're not striking out a ton. Let's just get them through 4 innings. Okay? Hey, Hilliard or Henry or whoever it may be, Walker or Marceau, you guys just have to get us to give us 4 2/3 to 5 1/3 innings of work. We'll take care of the rest. We'll turn it over to Zach Hess, Todd Peterson, and Fondo, and they'll carry us home. That's a very modern kind of Major League Baseball way of doing things. It's a very, you know, Joe Madden kind of way of doing things. So,
a lot of people have to be on for that to happen. There's a lot of moving pieces.
I'm aware.
It would work, but
we'll see. We'll see. I'm interested to see how much
a championship team would be able to do that.
That's very well said, my friend. Very well said. Championship team. My man, just bringing it. Just bringing it.
And you could probably listen to those games over here, couldn't you? It's probably a thing.
Yes. You could listen to the whole three
game
series.
Man, I got nervous for a second. Woo! I was like, am I somehow wrong?
Pre-game tonight, 6:30. First pitch, 7. Tomorrow, 6 o'clock pregame, right after the Kentucky Derby. First pitch, 6:30. And then we'll take care of you on Sunday as well. All three games, 2 and 2:30 on Sunday. So we're going to take care of you all weekend for the LSU-Ole Miss baseball series. Key series, once again, LSU-Ole Miss tied for third with two other teams in the SEC standings. A lot on the line, not only the SEC West, overall regular season championship still in reach, but seeding for the SEC tournament, which is going to be key. These Tigers, a win this weekend would be huge for them. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we'll have a preview for the Region Cajuns, who are on the road at Coastal Carolina, right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company. I am your host, Raymond Parch III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 Stadium Network. Give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline if you like, 337-706-0111. We spent the first segment talking about LSU baseball, how big of a weekend series this truly is against Ole Miss this weekend, starting tonight with the three-game set against the Ole Miss Rebels. But it's a big weekend as well for another team here locally. University of Louisiana, Raging Cajuns. Tony Robichaux's bunch is going to try to get things going in the right direction. Starting tonight with a three-game series on the road against Coastal Carolina, the Chanticleers, who, of course, as expected, is one of the best teams in the Sun Belt Conference. UL, meanwhile, is 7 games under .500 overall, 8-3 in conference play. They've lost 7 straight now. They're 6-12 on the road, which does not bode well for them. So what do we expect to see out of the Raging Cajuns, Tony Robichaux's bunch there in Conway, South Carolina, this weekend? They still have 2 more series to go after that before they go to the Sun Belt Conference Tournament, because right now they're not guaranteed a spot. Okay, you have to earn a spot to be even in the conference tournament. So they still have some work to do. Versus Georgia State next weekend for a 3-game set at home. Those will be the final games at the Teague this year. And then they finish up on the road at ULM. By the way, boo to the Sun Belt Conference. Why does the softball team and the baseball team have to finish this year on the road at ULM? Not cool, bro. Not cool. Not cool. I'll need to make a phone call after the show is completed to the Sun Belt Conference office. express my disdain for this.
A little shade being thrown? I don't know.
I'm sure they'll take my call. And I'm sure they'll go, okay, guy. Okay.
I mean, I got the old commissioner's phone number. Not going to help you any.
That's not going to help me at all. That's not going to help me at all here. Three games set against Coastal. They've lost, and look, during the seven-game losing streak, the Raging Cajuns have lost games that they should have won, and Tony's even talked about that. The game at Southern Miss, for example, they were leading late. Gave up a couple-run lead, lost 7-6. They lose a tough game over last weekend at the Teague against Texas State, 3-2, another one 10-8. They lost to UT Arlington a few weeks ago, 9-8. The last time the Raging Cajuns won was in the Wally Paunoff Junior Classic against LSU on April 16th.
It feels like forever ago.
It does, doesn't it? It does. Not that long ago, but it does feel like it's...
I mean, April 16th, it's May 3rd. Oh, you know what tomorrow is?
May the 4th be with you.
May the 4th be with you. It's a Saturday. I got to play some Star Wars music today.
Get it together. I mean, come on. You should have been already on top of that. For real.
Joke I always used to run at Alan all the time on Star Wars Day. I used to be like, oh, man, I can't believe it's Star Wars Day, man. Hey, Alan, live long and prosper.
Use the Star Trek line.
Just to trigger people.
People do get very passionate about that. Let me tell you, right now in the Sun Belt Conference standings, why these last three series are so key for the Raging Cajuns. Right now they are the second worst team in the entire conference. UL is 8-13 in conference play. That's one loss worse than ULM. So that series at ULM is going to be key to determine who's probably going to earn a spot in the Sun Belt Conference tournament over in Conway. So they got some work to do. The only team that's worse than them is the team that's coming to the Teague next weekend. Georgia State is the worst team in the conference at 4-17 overall in conference play. So... UL's got an opportunity here. Can they show some life in Conway against Coastal Carolina and then get two back-to-back series wins to punch their ticket for the conference tournament? We'll have to see. They'll start getting to work tonight there against the Chanticleers. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we're talking with Clarion Ledger's Nick Suss, Ole Miss Baseball, right here on 103.7 The Game. Hello and welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. I'm your host, Raymond Parse III, and we're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Right now, it's time for us to head out to the ARTCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our next guest. He works for the Clarion Ledger there in Jackson, Mississippi. He covers Ole Miss Athletics. Ole Miss is going to be traveling to Alex Box Stadium this weekend for a three-game set. 6:30 pregame tonight, 7 o'clock first pitch. You can listen to it live right here on 103.7 The Game. It's our privilege to welcome back to the program the one and only Nick Suss. Nick, how are you this morning, brother?
I am doing quite well. How's everybody out at 103.7?
We're doing great, man. We're doing great. We're trying to continue to raise the bar that you had here in your brief time as a guest host. It's been difficult, though, brother. I'm just being honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty awesome, and I think most of the listeners that remember me probably know that, but I think you're carrying the torch pretty well.
Oh, Nick, I appreciate you, man. Look, man, I know you're busy. Obviously, you had to squeeze in a midweek game. Let's start there. Look, LSU has had its share of troubles this season with midweek contests. They've lost to Southern, Northwestern State, McNeese State, just to name a few. Ole Miss is ranked in the top 25, right outside of the top 10. They suffer a rare defeat to them Golden Eagles of Southern Miss on Wednesday night. You were there at the game covering it. What did you see and what happened?
Well, they couldn't hit was the pretty simple answer to it. Southern Miss had an interesting strategy for the midweek. They went to the bullpen every single time Ole Miss got to the number 3, 4, or 5 hitter. When it got to the middle of the order, Southern said, you're not facing somebody you've already seen. So they ended up using 8 or 9 pitchers, but Ole Miss only came away with 5 hits, 2 were bleeders, and one of their 3 runs was off of an error in left field. It was just a bad offensive game, and you compound that with the 2 times they did score in 2 separate innings. Southern came back in the bottom half of the inning and put up runs. They could never get that shutdown inning to preserve the tie. So it was just a bad game, but Southern Miss is a top 50 team in the RPI. They're a team that is generally a 2 seed in regionals. Sometimes they get a chance to host. That's not a loss on par with some of the losses that LSU had and one or two of the losses that Ole Miss had earlier in the season. Still concerning when you're a team that makes its bones with offense when you can't hit, but I guess that's a reductive way to put it.
Nick, let's talk a little bit about Ole Miss is so good at home there in Oxford, but they're kind of dreadful on the road. They're not the only team in the SEC that struggles on the road. LSU has had its road problems as well. Why is Ole Miss such a Jekyll and Hyde team home and away?
I don't know. I mean, baseball's bizarre in that sense that home field advantage probably matters more in baseball than any other sport because when you get to hit versus pitch and the different ballpark dimensions and all of that stuff. Ole Miss is a good hitting team, a good power hitting team, and they're not a great defensive team in the outfield. They're really not playing a natural outfielder. They play a catcher in left field, a shortstop in center field, and a second baseman in right field. So the outfield dimensions will mess with them every once in a while. But for the most part, baseball's just weird like that sometimes. I can't explain it too much. The weirdest part, I'm sure some people in Baton Rouge know this, but I'm sure everybody in Oxford knows this. Ole Miss hasn't won a series in Baton Rouge since 1982. This isn't just they're a little rough on the road this season. This is a generational divide of this team has not won in Baton Rouge. So that's going to be something to watch out for. This team's hungry for it. Every Ole Miss team's been hungry for it. They just can't seem to get the wins they need here in Baton Rouge. And that'll be interesting to see if they can get over that hump.
We're talking to Nick Suss of the Clarion Ledger. He covers Ole Miss athletics. Nick, something else that I find interesting is we got a bit of a logjam in the SEC standings overall, as well as in the Western Division. Arkansas and Vanderbilt sit atop, but only by a few games. And then there's that 4-place tie at third, LSU, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, and Georgia. How key is this weekend series for Ole Miss in that regard to still be in contention for an SEC regular season championship and, more importantly, earning possibly a top 4 seed for the conference tournament in Hoover in a couple of weeks?
Oh, that's absolutely huge. And Ole Miss, not to look ahead or anything, but they have State next weekend. So this is 6 straight games because they don't have a midweek next week against teams they're tied with at third place in the SEC. This is huge. And for LSU, you take 2 out of 3 or you sweep this series, you're in a position where you probably control your destiny heading into the SEC tournament when it comes to one of those top 4 seeds. For Ole Miss, they got 9 SEC games left, and all 9 are against top 25 teams. It's going to be a little bit harder for them, and that's why this weekend is huge, because 2 of those 3 series are on the road, and as you mentioned, they haven't been the strongest road team this year. That said, all of that put together, it's always going to be a big series when Ole Miss and LSU play each other. None of this should be shocking, but this one even more so because when it's timed in the season, because of what these teams are both striving for, neither of them seem to have a regional hosting job locked up. I think LSU might be on the inside and Ole Miss might be on the outside track right now, but a win for either team in this series could flip that. It's just such a huge situation for these teams to be in. And it's going to be really fun to see how these styles kind of clash against each other.
Nick, let's talk a little bit about the weekend matchup. Does anything change for Ole Miss in their preparation with the knowledge now that LSU, after months of kind of rumor, has finally pulled the trigger? They've taken Zach Hess, put him back into the bullpen starting this weekend. They got their back of the rotation set. Eric Walker looks like he's returned to form. He's going to be the Saturday starter, and the freshman Landon Marceau will be the Sunday starter. They're going to throw Mikhail Hilliard this week against Ole Miss due to Henry still having arm soreness. Does that change anything now knowing that the Friday night starter that maybe they had been planning for or preparing for is no longer there?
Maybe it does, but So the real issue for Ole Miss this season has been they have not been great against left-handed pitching. They kind of woke up from that last week against Texas A&M when they strung together a couple wins against Asa Lacy and John Doxakis, two of the best lefties in the conference. But I think that might be what LSU's doing. I know Cole Henry's not ready to go yet, but stacking the room with lefties is probably much harder for Ole Miss to contend with than it would be stacking the room with guys they're unfamiliar with, because this is a very veteran Ole Miss team. Seven of the nine everyday players were everyday players last year. They've seen Mikhail Hilliard before. They've seen Zach Hess before. A lot of these guys have seen Eric Walker before, even though he didn't play last year. That's how veteran this team is. They know how to scout. They know how to game plan. Obviously, it's going to throw you for a loop when you've been preparing for a while, but I'd be shocked if they started preparing for LSU before Cole Henry got hurt. I think they always kind of know that he wasn't going to be the guy. It's just training from Hess's 94 to Hilliard's 87, 88. But they've seen soft throwing this year. It shouldn't be too much of a concern, but it definitely is interesting to see how they'll respond to left-handers.
We're talking to Nick Suss of the Clarion Ledger. He covers Ole Miss Athletics for that publication. Nick, give me a little bit of scouting report, so to speak, on the pitchers that Ole Miss is going to be bringing to the table that are going to be starting there on the bump this weekend inside Alex Box Stadium.
Yeah, it's looking like it's going to be the regular three for Ole Miss. On Friday, they'll go with Will Etheridge, who has been absolutely phenomenal this year. He's a righty. He throws low to mid-90s. He's got a good pitch mix. He does a good job of pitching strikes. He doesn't make many mistakes. He hasn't been beaten too many times this year, and he really has developed into an ace for a rotation that had to replace all three of its starters from last year. On Saturday, it's probably going to be Doug Nikhazy. He's a freshman lefty. He's kind of a craftier lefty. He's got a good three-pitch mix. He does it really well. He's extremely poised. He doesn't really let the environment ever get to him, and that's why he's been able to succeed so much as a true freshman in the SEC. He's coming off of a career week last week where he threw seven innings, only gave up two runs, 10 strikeouts. He had a great game against that A&M lineup. And then Sunday, the question mark is, it's going to be Gunnar Hoglund. Gunnar Hoglund also coming off of a career game last week. He finally threw six innings for the first time all season. This is a guy who chose to come to Ole Miss this year instead of signing with the Pirates as their first-round pick. He was picked in the first round last summer, chose to go the college route instead, has kind of struggled a little bit early. He hasn't been too great at going deep into games. This was the first time, as I said, last week was the first time he ever made it through the lineup two full times to get down six innings. He's kind of struggled with distance and stamina at times. You'll notice that he'll start walking batters, he'll start throwing wild pitches when he gets a little tired. But if he got past that last week, like he sort of showed he could against A&M, that's a dangerous 1-2-3. And the young one with two freshmen there at the back end of the rotation.
Nick, who are some of the leading hitters in this lineup that the LSU pitching staff is going to have to make sure not to throw meat pitches to?
Well, this Ole Miss lineup is pretty darn formidable, but the guys I'll signal out, number two in the lineup, he usually hits in the two-hole, is Greg Hessinger. He's gotten on base 34 games in a row, including every game in SEC play this season. He's just on a tear. He's getting multiple hits almost every game. It's really hard to get him out these days. He's the guy that's going to be on the bases, moving around the bases, scoring runs. Then the guys behind him, you have the three-hole hitter Tyler Keenan, who's second in the SEC with 54 runs batted in. You have Thomas Dillard in the four-hole, who anyone who's watched SEC baseball for these last couple of years is familiar with, just how powerful and how quick and just how strong he is. He's Ole Miss's last five walk-offs have either been hit or scored by him. He's been captain clutch for the last 2 years. In the five and the six, you have Cole Dabowski and Cooper Johnson, who were both fringe second or third team All-SEC guys at their position. And then leading off, you have Ryan Olenek, who's only batting 370 this season.
Only so, 370, he says.
So it's an interesting group. It's a really good hitting team. And other than Cooper Johnson, who wasn't an everyday catcher last year, all of these guys are returning players. It's really interesting. It's a good lineup, strong lineup, and they do it well.
Nick, we'll wrap it up with this because I have to ask you about it. There have been some reports that Ole Miss's longtime head coach, well-respected man, Mike Bianco. Obviously, his son plays for LSU. And apparently, they haven't seen each other since Christmas. And they're going to have – they had dinner last night, Thursday. But that was going to be the extent of kind of their their hanging out. It was have a quick dinner last night on Thursday night. What's Coach Bianco said about having to face his son this weekend?
The short answer is nothing. He's not a super talkative guy after losses, and after last night's loss, it was kind of hard to get much out of him. But obviously, it's going to be exciting for him to play against his son, to play against his alma mater. It's such a fascinating situation he finds himself in. And I think he came to the box maybe week two or three of this season. So I don't think it's been since Christmas. I think it's been since February. But it's going to be as fun as you can expect to have this family reunion played out on the diamond.
Nick, appreciate you making time for us. Enjoy tonight's game and the rest of the weekend. And we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
All right. Appreciate you, man.
That's Nick Suss. Covers Ole Miss athletics for the Clarion Ledger there in Jackson, Mississippi. We got to go to a break. More sports talk coming up right here on RP3 and Company on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. You get to see my beautiful bald head in HD. I mean, there's no better way to start off your morning than that. Just saying.
High definition. So how was that interview 3 days in the making?
It was that was the epitome of efforting.
Nick Suss is Nick Suss if he's nothing else. Let's see if I can find this for you.
Nick has always been a ton of fun, a terrific writer. Back in the days, SEC Country, he was our friend, friend of the station because of his work with SEC Country, and then he went to the Clarion Ledger, covered Southern Miss for about a minute, and now has been working, doing good work with Ole Miss.
So let's see. There
what
was,
do you have for me? What do you have for me?
Just a taste of Nick Suss here.
They're piled on the infield grass. They've earned their way. They've won their pass.
He did this with a little Casio.
On a streak
you can hear
of winning
the beat.
Games of kicking butt and taking names. All of this just to take aim for a trophy they can one day claim. Omaha bound. Yes, your team is Omaha bound.
It gets old, and then you'll like this one too. He did this one, I believe. This one was live on the air here during his guest host stint.
After SEC Country folded.
Right. I made like just a ribbon with him, and I was like, you wouldn't come and sing one of your parody songs live. And the man showed up Monday with a song, and I believe this is the one he sang. No, there's a different one, but this is still good, too.
Wish that I was on a rocket top down in the Tennessee hills. Ain't no smoggy smoke on rocket top, ain't no telephone bills. Once I had a girl on rocket top, half arrow, yeah. Wild as a mink, but sweet as soda pop, I still dream about that. Once two strangers climbed a rocket top down to blow moonshine still.
Oh, he's the best. He's the best.
Strong defense,
this
electric.
An Ole Miss football preview.
They look good and they're playing hard. They like comebacks and they're pulling through. You fans love when you're winning games. You want more and you want it fast. Those two wins, they were savored. But how they do when they're favored? Oh, rebel rebels, they love to pass. Rebels rebels, it's track on grass.
Oh, so there's just a little taste of what Nick Suss does in his free time when he's bored.
My man is creative.
He also told us that he has. I don't know if he still lives in the same place now because he's had so many different jobs over the last year. But at least when he was guest hosting here, the place he lived in, he had one or two roommates. I forget, but he at least had a roommate. And on the wall in their apartment was a dry erase board.
Okay.
And the dry erase board was for one sole purpose, and it was to keep track of who made the most recent, most obscure reference to anything in the apartment. So he's like he said, like one of the longest things that stayed on the board was like a reference to Xena Princess Warrior or something like that. They're like, oh, that's really obscure, and so like that gets written on the board, and they literally would just live their life apparently writing about sports, singing parody songs about other things, and keeping track of who made the most obscure reference last. We have families, you and I.
Yes.
Nick Suss is the lucky one here.
Nick is living his best version of his life.
He is living the best version, I think, of a lot of people's lives.
He's having fun. He's
still covering an SEC program.
And he's going to be in Baton Rouge, and he's going to have himself.
Is he going to be in Baton Rouge?
He's coming down. He's coming down. He's coming down. So
you get a brewski with Nick Suss.
Nick is a ton of fun. Nick is a ton of fun.
When you can find him, he's a ton of fun.
Yes. After two false starts on the week, having him on the show.
I want you to know
delivered on Friday morning, nonetheless, at the earlier time. Right. Like we tried to get him later, and no. We got him earlier. That worked out well.
I also, just so you know, I spared you. There is another track in here that Nick Suss has done that I just didn't play because I figured three was enough. But he has done multiple of the, like, they're everywhere. They're all over his Twitter. It's great. Yeah. He did another one for the Troy week. I don't know why. I think that maybe that was the one. Was this the one where he was in studio? Because why would he be singing about Troy? Why would he? Let's see. Nope, still not in. He did one in studio, and you can tell the quality difference is much better.
Danny Edling is the QB. Starter at LSU. He held his job quite firmly until Coach O said, it's Miles Brennan's job, too.
What?
Yes, Miles will play some drives, too.
Oh, this is
good. It's Troy this week. Trying to keep the streak. Troy plays the Tigers down in Death Valley.
Oh, that's good.
Facing Troy this week.
That's really good. That's not bad.
Our boy.
Jeremiah was a bullfrog, right?
Jeremiah was a bullfrog, yes. Nick Suss, the very best of Nick Suss, right here on RP3 in Company. I'm happy that Nick landed on his feet after SEC country, right?
Right.
And he got himself a good job, and he's working in the SEC, and he's covering Ole Miss. But we can't have Nick on all the time. So that's the drawback to that, is that we can't have Suss on all the time. But he made some time for us this morning, so appreciate it. That's going to do it for the first hour. It's in the books, college baseball talk, a lot of it. We'll switch gears. My rant of the week is coming up. Start off the second hour here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parks III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. LSU All-American Skylar Green.
You know, as a young athlete growing up, you always want to do the game-winning something, the game-winning shot, game-winning catch. And I thought the biggest part for me right there, that Georgia catch, that solidified everybody seeing that LSU for real.
Ragin' Cajun hoop star Elfrid Payton.
But it's definitely a boost when, you know, when you look up in the stadium and you see your mom, see your dad, night in and night out, it's really different. I encourage everybody to be in the opportunity to play at home, to do it. It's very fulfilling.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Let me tell you something. You know what really grinds my gears?
Uh-oh. RP3 is ready to sound off.
Serenity now! Serenity now!
Serenity now!
Serenity now!
Serenity now!
Serenity now!
This is more than a complaint, but less than a tirade. This is Ray's Rant of the Week.
Spoilers. That's right. And the people who whine about other people giving out spoilers, I want to talk to you this morning. Because I've been sitting on this for a while, and I'm simmered up about it. And we've had a lot of this become the narrative in pop culture and in sports culture. I see people, I started seeing it when it said, I see people tweeting out or posting on the gram or on Facebook, hey, no one say anything, I'm taping the national championship game or I'm taping the playoff game, so please don't spoil it for me. And then that carries over to pop culture. Game of Thrones, don't spoil Game of Thrones for me, please don't post on social media. And then Avengers Endgame. Don't spoil Avengers Endgame. Don't give me any spoilers. Don't post anything on social media. Here's a thought process. If you don't want to have something spoiled for you, you have the power to do so by not being on social media. I know. You just put on the emergency brake in your vehicle because it's that mind-blowing of a concept. Whoa, Raymond, what did you just say? Believe it or not, there was a world before social media. And it was okay to live in that world. It was okay. This constant whining, just crybaby approach to this. Don't ruin it for me. So, let me understand this. Your day is ruined, or your existence is hampered in some way because I may give out a plot point for a billion-dollar movie, a multi-million-dollar television franchise, or a sporting event seen by millions of people. Are we that weak-minded? Are we that much of a bunch of damn snowflakes that we whine and complain and ask people not to spoil things for us? It's entertainment. It ain't real life, man. If you don't want to have things spoiled, stay off social media. You have the control. You have the power. It's in your hands. Literally, it's in your hand. You're literally Thanos with the Infinity Stones. The only thing you have to do is not open up that app for Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, FarmersOnly.com, ChristianSingles.com, whatever. You can jump in. I know you want to.
ChristianSingles.com. I've been watching The Act on Hulu, that Gypsy Rose show, and that's the website she used. I'm just saying. Again, Cody Schuch relating interrupting sports talk with non-sports talk.
I saw nothing from it. Constantly. Constantly. It's one thing, like if you don't want to hear it, you're in the office. You're at the water cooler. You can simply walk away from a conversation that's being had between two people about a TV show, a movie, or a sporting event from the night before. My life does not revolve around your schedule. And to be that presumptuous to believe that everyone else should accommodate you is so self-centered and so selfish and so childish and so weak. Just weak. I want you to think about this. The next time you want to whine on social media about someone spoiling a Game of Thrones episode, Avengers Endgame, a sporting event from the night before, what in the hell do you think your grandparents would say about that? You know, the generation that lived through the Depression and World War II. Do you think they sacrificed everything they did so you could sit here and be weak-minded and a bunch of lazy snowflakes that can't do anything but complain because your day will be ruined because of a fictional character and a fictional story that you may overhear something concerning fiction? Are we really to this point? I just want to go around throat punching people when I see that. I get so this is Raymond at decibel level 2. Over the weekend I was at 5. Last weekend I was at the Angola Prison Rodeo, and I can guarantee you that the gentlemen that were taking place in the rodeo don't care about spoilers. Because they're going through some real hardships, like life in prison. And I'll take it another step further for all the whiny babies out there that want to talk about spoilers all the damn time. I'll take it to another level for you. I was there in a capacity with the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame, which I'm privileged to be a voter for. I'm currently the vice president of the Louisiana Sports Writers Association, so we wanted to do something nice for one of our inductees. And one of our inductees this summer in Natchitoches in June is T. Barrett Porter, a.k.a. T. Barry Porter, Louisiana's first professional rodeo cowboy. So we had a special pre-rodeo event for him where we put him out in a wagon. We took him to the center of the ring. They introduced him. He got a standing ovation. It was a nice thing. This man's 92 years old, has one arm. Spent his entire life as a rodeo cowboy and ran a ranch and raised children. You need to be more like T. Barry Porter and less than tween on Twitter. T. Barry Porter, 5 years ago, was on a bulldozer, got knocked off. The bulldozer ran over him, separated his shoulder blade, broke his shoulder blade, broke above his elbow and below his elbow in his arm. This man's 85 years old at the time. Just got ran over by a bulldozer. You know what he did? He dusted himself off, got in his 5-speed truck, went to go see his son, honked the horn, and told his son, "Hey, son, I'm hurt real bad. They may have to take my arm. Can you take me to the hospital?" And he never went under. If that sweet man can handle that, I'm pretty sure your day's not going to be ruined if someone tells you what happens to Thanos in Avengers Endgame. Because if you're that weak-minded, you're not living your life the right way. You need to be slapped across your head and get your act together. You can love comic books. This ain't a bashing on comic books. I used to run a comic book shop with my parents when I was a teenager. I used to collect comic books. I absolutely adore the Marvel movies, and I will go see Endgame. But you know what? If I overhear someone talking about something that happens in the movie, or when I heard Cody talk about it with someone else, did I get mad at Cody? Did I start crying at my producer and go, "Cody, I haven't seen Avengers Endgame yet. Oh my God, why did you spoil it for me? I hate you. Oh my God." No. Because I'm a grown-ass man. Be more like grown folks and less like little whiny babies. I'm done. Cut me off. Just cut me off.
I appreciate your entire rant on don't be so mad about spoilers, and a rant that contained no spoilers for Avengers Endgame. So well done, sir. I appreciate that. I mean, I've already seen it, so you wouldn't have been hurting my feelings any. But, you know, well done. So you haven't seen it yet. You need to go see that.
Yes, I think this weekend.
Spoiler alert, Thanos transforms into a
dragon
unicorn with flames coming off of its back, and it flies, but it doesn't have wings, so it's like a magical type of flight.
Wait, so it's a My Little Pony. That's great. Exactly. He turns into My Little Pony.
I guess a unicorn with wings is just a Pegasus, right?
Ah, there you go. Yes. Yes. And I will enjoy it. And not everyone is, but I see a lot of people out there. Like, dude, if someone tweet, like,
there's
you don't
a difference.
Have to read their tweet. Like, you don't, like.
I will say, though, there's one difference. The story that has gotten a lot of play, a lot of people have seen it, that guy in Hong Kong that got the you-know-what beat out of him for spoiling the movie to people, that, to me, is a bit of a different circumstance, because I do agree with what you're saying. If it's that important to you that you don't want to be spoiled, for regardless of what it is, whether it's a movie or a sporting event, doesn't matter. If it's that important to you, then you can go social media blackout. You can do what you need to do in
you
order
have the power
to avoid that. Right. You're He-Man in the situation.
That's a reference I like.
But this particular guy in Hong Kong was standing out in the parking lot of the theater right in front, and as people were walking in, was just yelling out spoilers loudly, being belligerent and obnoxious.
That's different.
That's different.
And that's someone that deserves to get punched. Yes.
Right. It's really, like, Raymond's main point was that you have the power to avoid these things if you want. In that specific instance, it was really difficult to avoid a guy in the parking lot of the theater screaming spoilers
totally
out
different.
Loud.
That's right.
So, yeah, he deserved.
You can't black him out. You can't black him out.
So he deserved to get blacked out.
There you go. I would concur with that.
Right. But
and in my younger years, I probably would have been the one to knock him out.
Right. Oh, you got to get over here.
What are you trying to do?
Yeah, I think, but the moral of the story here is you have the power.
The moral of the story is don't be whiny.
Oh, well, that applies a lot.
When I see people on social media, when it comes to the spoilers with Game of Thrones or Avengers Endgame or national championship events that are whine more than my 4.5-year-old daughter, it's time to check yourself before you wreck yourself. I'm just saying. By the way, big shout out to my daughter, Hattie. Karate.
Woo! Hiya.
Twice a week. She's loving it, man. She beat up on a little boy last night. It was awesome. That's a subject for another
2019.
Up next on RP3 and Company, a very far less angry segment. It'll be RPOs with RP3 right here on 103.7 The Game.
Blue poncho.
Shotgun formation. Cody snaps the questions.
Dre.
And RP3 makes the reads. This is RPOs with RP3.
Blue poncho.
When you hear the wheezy, you know it is time for RPOs with RP3 on RP3 and Company. We're hanging out in the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. And you know the drill by now, Raymond. I got some topics. I'm going to give you a little info on them.
I got to stop dancing. I just saw myself on TV.
And after you get the info, then you will return serve and let me know whether you like to run with them, if you're going to pass on that, or if maybe you're going to take a little option to just wait and see, take the easy way out. Hence, okay, why this is called RPOs.
I like what you're going with this.
Let's dive into it now. Talking LSU baseball. They're taking on Ole Miss this weekend at home. And Zach Hess, of course, he's going to be the topic of discussion here, is officially in the bullpen. That's no longer a worry or a concern or a thought. It's happening. It's done. I want to know from you, RPO, first time this season that Zach Hess is officially in the bullpen, and we will see Zach Hess more than once in this Ole Miss series.
Run.
I think so, too.
I think you're going to see him at least twice.
I think Maneri, if at all possible, he will try to get him in there twice.
Yes, he's going to try to get him as much run as possible here.
I mean, there's no time to ease him into this. He has to be a full go now.
No, not with where they're at in the standings and what they still need to accomplish going into the SEC tournament.
I mean, if Zach Hess is theoretically going
to
be your...
And he wanted to do it last week.
Right. If he's going to theoretically be your ninth inning guy and you have a 2-run lead on Friday and Saturday, I expect to see Zach Hess on Friday and Saturday.
And I will say this. I'll take it one step further.
Mm-hmm.
You could see him probably all three games, but you're going to see a heavy amount of relief pitching this entire series. I think, honestly, we said it at the top of the show, that's what I think the philosophy is going to be when you put Zach in there. Regardless if it's going to be Hilliard or Henry, it'll be Hilliard tonight on the bump, probably Henry next week, is those guys are only going to have to go like 4 or 5 innings. I think that's going to be the mantra because of the arm soreness and everything else, right?
Right.
You're going to be like, okay, you guys just get us to the fifth. We'll hand it over to Peterson, Fondo, Hess. They'll bring us home. So I think you're going to see a lot of the bullpen this weekend.
It'll be interesting if we do see Zach Hess, though, in more than one game. As I said, I do agree, and I think that there's no time to say, okay, Zach, we're going to bring you out of the bullpen one time this weekend, maybe two times next weekend, and then two times again the following weekend, and then you're a full go. No, there's no time for that. If this is the plan now, which it obviously is, I think you have to hit the ground running with it. And if Zach Hess is needed in all three games, then I think you have to use him in all three games. But we'll see, with arm soreness being as bad of a problem as it is for LSU, couldn't blame Paul Maneri if he was a little trigger shy on doing that. But
But no arm soreness with Zach.
We'll see. We know it's been contagious, though, in that locker room. Let's talk a little fighting now, Raymond. We don't do that a lot. I think this might be the first fighting topic during RPOs, which is fun. And, of course, we're going to talk Daniel Cormier. Why would we talk anything else?
D.C.
and
August.
Stipe Miocic. That's his name.
God bless you.
We're going to go with, you want to hear the crazy thing? Stipe Miocic, I think he's American. He's like from
Iowa.
Ohio, I think it is.
He's from the Midwest, of course.
It is. It's crazy. But DC and Stipe, they are working on finalizing their fight in UFC. It's pretty much done, but I guess there's some I's that need to be dotted and T's that need to be crossed, if you know what I mean. But that fight will happen. And that news of the fight came out around the same exact time that news of Brock Lesnar retiring from MMA came out. So it was all kind of a same thing. We heard Brock Lesnar's going to retire. He's not going to fight UFC or MMA anymore, which means the DC Brock Lesnar fight's not going to happen now. So we're looking at DC Stipe 2. I'm down for that. I don't have a problem with seeing Cormier and Miocic in the octagon again. It was a great fight the first time around. We also know, though, that Daniel Cormier is a huge WWE fan. Brock Lesnar, one of the biggest WWE talents on their roster as we speak. Daniel Cormier last year was involved in rumors of him when he retires from UFC fully moving to like commentary or some kind of role like that
WWE.
He's
already started to do that.
Well, no, in UFC he has, but we're talking about commentary on WWE. He's wanted to come and do commentary on Monday Night Raw. He did a tryout. There were rumors, but it didn't really go anywhere, but he's still fighting.
Okay.
My thoughts here now with DC in his final year of fighting, we know that by the end of this year, Daniel Cormier will retire. He's said that for 3 or 4 years now that once he turns 40, he's going to finish. He's done. I need to hear from you, RPO, on the fact that the Lesnar-Daniel Cormier fight is still going to happen, but inside a WWE ring. And you know what? This is legitimate, too, which is why you're not laughing, because this is actually a legitimate question.
It is a legitimate question.
Not this year. It wouldn't happen in 2019, but could this be a 2020 thing? The fan in me says yes.
But it seems like something that McMahon would make sure happens. I'm going to say run, even though I wish it was passed. Because I know what's going to happen.
Lesnar's going to crush him.
Right. And DC has built up a great legacy of being a great champion.
A real fighting champion. Lesnar's been once before, granted.
Right.
But
just going to the WWE and then trying to do that and trying
he's
to have the feud
over.
He's
such a huge fan, though. He's such a big fan.
That's why I say run. I could see him going into wrestling.
He would do the job. He would do the job and be happy to do it.
I could see him going into wrestling and their whole narrative, the storyline would be he's there as a commentator and Lesnar mocks him and then does something to him and, like, you know, power bombs him into the broadcast booth, and that makes DC become a wrestler.
If me and you can write it, they can write it.
It just writes itself. That's why I wasn't laughing. It's a run. It's a run all day long.
I would love to see it. Because I love Daniel Cormier, and I think it would be a great feud because, yeah, I think Lesnar would win that feud because he's the WWE guy, and Vince is not going to bury his own guy. But I would love to see, just because how big of a fan Daniel Cormier is, how serious he would take it. I think it would just be, it'd be great to see. And then as long as after the match is over, Cormier stays around and does some commentary stuff. Not necessarily in the ring, but just to see him on my television would be great on a weekly basis. I would love that.
And seeing a local guy.
Yeah. Make it. And you know he would rep Lafayette hard.
Oh, it would be so hard.
So.
All right, Ron.
Fun topic. All right, real quick, I got one more for you. Saints draft talk, right? Okay. Names like Eric McCoy, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, Saquon Hampton, Elise Mack. These names, we all know them, right?
Yes.
The one that should stand out to you is Eric McCoy. Being their top draft pick, the Saints. They didn't pick in the first round.
Second round pick.
Their top draft pick. They traded up to get him.
14 spots.
And he is projected, or was projected, to go in the first round.
Correct.
RPO for me, Eric McCoy will be the best performing selection when the season comes around out of the Saints for this draft.
Oh, that's a run.
Okay.
Because he's going to be a plug-and-play starter.
There you go.
Now, do I think Connor O'Gara tells
Happy
you
birthday,
that,
by the way, to Connor O'Gara. It's his birthday today.
Connor tells you how good Saquon Hampton really is, and that's a sneaky pick down there that could develop. But I think he's going to be a special teamers. I think the kid out of Florida with the three names.
Chauncey Gardner-Johnson?
Yes. Chauncey Gardner, three first names at that. He could be a big special teams player and a dime guy that could come up with some big interceptions. But, look, you need to solidify your offensive line. You may not see it. The diehard Houdat fans may not see it. But trust me, if he develops a rapport with Drew Brees early in camp, that offensive line is going to be so much better because McCoy's on it at the center position. So, I say run.
That's it. That's all I got for you, brother.
RPOs with RP3 is in the book. I'm in a far better mood. Got that rant out of my system. I can enjoy my weekend now. It's kind of like a release. Coming up, our boy Barry. Barry Herstis from the Saints News Network, Big Easy Magazine. He's going to give us his thoughts on the draft. I bet you he's excited about McCoy. Right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. I'm your host, Raymond Parsons III, the producer extraordinaire, the man behind the glass, Cody Schutz. We need to change things up. We need to make sure there's a camera on Cody at all times. Give him a little TV love. We'll try to make that happen.
Good thing I control the cameras.
Bravo, sir. Bravo. We're broadcasting live, as always, from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 Stadium Network, 24-hour sports news network. It's time now to head back out to the ARTCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our second guest of the day. He joins us every Friday to talk Houdats. He's a contributor for Big Easy Magazine, as well as the Saints News Network. And he's going to be joining us, giving us his insight on the New Orleans Saints 2019 draft. It's the one and only, our boy Barry, Barry Herstis. Barry, how are you this morning?
RP3, how are you this morning, my friend?
I'm doing well. So, a week has essentially passed here, Barry, a little less than a week. Since the draft is in the books, the Saints did not make a move into the first round, but they did trade up in the second round, got the guy that they wanted. Like they typically do. They target players and they go out and get them and make it happen. They also got themselves a fourth round pick. So, what did you think of the moves that the Saints made? Mickey Loomis, Jeff Ireland and company. And what do you think of the players that they were able to select?
Loved it, loved it, loved it. I can't stress it enough. I gave it a B+ in my final draft grade for Big Easy Magazine, which is up at Big Easy Magazine, if you want to check it out. The only reason I didn't give it an A is because they only had 5 picks. But, I mean, for a team that had such limited draft capital to come away with the type of talent that they got in those 5 players, and I'm sure we'll discuss the undrafted free agency class as well because that was phenomenal. The scouting department, they knocked it out the ballpark. It just feeds in to the theory or the outlook that we've been speaking of for the last several months that this team is probably going to go all in, so to speak, on the 2019 season. I know a lot of fans were disappointed that they didn't take a wide receiver at that spot. But as it turns out, they might have gotten the receiver they wanted or needed the undrafted guys with the Humphrey kid from Texas. But what I liked best is that they didn't cave in to the pressure to hit a home run. They didn't, you know, everybody's on their case about what they did with Davenport. And yet those same people that criticized them for the Davenport move were criticizing them again because they didn't make a trade to move up in this draft. So I don't know what Saints fans want, but thank God we have a regime in place that it has a clear and solid focus. They know, I mean, look, this roster from top to bottom, I mean, we can argue Patriots, Rams, Kansas City. This team from top to bottom might have the best roster in the NFL. And making the moves that they made last week only solidifies that fact.
Barry, let's talk about the first pick that they selected. They traded up 14 spots, got themselves the center out of Texas A&M. I think this is a home run pick. He appears to be a plug-and-play starter. It also gives them now all this great depth because you have him start at center. Now you have Eason that can be your backup at multiple positions for either Walford or Andres Pete. Also, you signed Eason. He can be your insurance policy if Pete walks in free agency after this season or if you need to put him at left guard while Pete maybe has to sub in at tackle somewhere because we know that the tackle positions, right, especially with Armstead. Your thoughts on the kid, the young man out of Texas A&M that they got?
I totally agree with everything you said. Just phenomenal. I think he was ranked the number three center overall as far as, you know, centers in the draft class. But you can argue he's the best center in the class. The fact that he lasted to 48 is staggering. So, and as you recall, I believe it was 2 weeks ago when we were talking about this, I had told you then that the draft from the first 15 to 20 players were your elite caliber guys. And then basically anywhere from 20 slotted all the way down into, say, the mid-60s even, where the Saints were picking originally. The talent, you know, from say, 25 to 65, let's say, was so even. I mean, inevitably, somebody was going to drop. As it turned out, several players dropped. But for the Saints, instead of being tempted to go after an Andy Isabella or trade up a few more spots, they could have got Paris Campbell, who went at 59, to the Colts. I mean, there was a lot of things they could have done, but it was the right move. It was the smart move because you only gave up a second-round pick next year, which to me, to get an elite-caliber center who's a plug-and-play guy who might become one of the best centers in the NFL a decade into his career, to get him at number 48 and give up a second-round pick, that's not too shabby.
We're talking to our boy, Barry Hurstis. He covers the New Orleans Saints for the Big Easy magazine as well as the Saints News Network. Barry, let's move on to the fourth round because I love that pick as well. You can't have too many defensive backs. We understand that Lattimore is the number one. We understand that Eli Apple is number two for this season. They also have Patrick Robinson. They have depth at corner and at safety, but they got themselves a versatile young man who's a playmaker. What'd you think of the kid out of Florida they took in the fourth round?
Oh, yeah, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, man. Again, the same thing. It is almost like a repeat of the McCoy pick because you basically had a guy who should not have been there. The fact that he was still there boggles the imagination. If you think McCoy being available at 48 was something, the fact that Gardner-Johnson was there where he was taken is ridiculous. I mean, just ridiculous. I mean, we've all obviously, you know, grew up, or most of us are LSU fans. So, and we've seen that Florida Gators defense, for the past few years, always competitive. And Gardner Johnson, clearly one of their best players, along with Polite and a few other guys that got drafted off of their defense. As you alluded to, a playmaker, got several returns for touchdowns. Look, that I know some Saints fans were maybe wondering if Marcus Williams took a step back last year, maybe a little sophomore slump, so to speak. We don't know what's going to happen with Von Bell. I mean, we can assume that Von Bell and Marcus Williams will both come back. And if they do, if Bell and Williams both come back, as we anticipate they will, and then you're putting Johnson back there with them, oh, good Lord. I mean, can you have a deeper secondary than that? I mean, Lattimore, Apple, Bell, Williams. Now you got Gardner Johnson in the mix. And I'll touch, we're sure we'll touch on the Barkley kid here in a minute. I mean, not Barkley, Saquon Hampton kid here in a minute. But it's just phenomenal. I love what they've done with this defense. Especially given how they looked at the beginning of last year, they instead of sitting on their hands and just hoping that it was going to improve somehow, they took the initiative. They were aggressive. They went out, they made the trade for Apple, and now here you are in the draft. They know maybe safety is a little shaky, and they address that. Just a phenomenal pick once again.
Barry, you mentioned him, Saquon Hampton out of Rutgers. I know they weren't a very good team, but we had Connor O'Gara on earlier this week from Saturday Down South. And he is extremely high on that young man. He says he's versatile. He's a hard worker, a team leader. And he says that will end up being a huge steal. Could be the steal of this draft class for the Saints. The Hampton kid out of Rutgers, he says, probably will make an impact on special teams and could work his way into becoming a more reliable player than just a special teamer. Mm-hmm. What did you see from Hampton? And that's another guy, right? Because Mickey Loomis said they got three guys in their top 70 is what he said, right?
And, right.
But all those guys essentially fell out of the overall top 70. What do you think about Hampton there that they took in the sixth round, the young man defensive back out of Rutgers?
I like him, even though Rutgers was, 1-11 last year.
Oh, they were dreadful,
bro. That wasn't a reflection of his play or his skill set. It just means that Rutgers had a bad team last year, particularly on offense. But I love the pick. I mean, it's just like Luma said, he was ranked within their top 70. I mean, this kid, he can play. And he's not, I know he's a great special teamer, and that's the primary reason really why he was taken, but he can play. He can hit. So, don't sleep on a kid just because they went 1-11. That's got nothing to do with the young man's skill set or his capabilities. And now, again, we're talking about depth. So now you got a guy who can be, you usually keep three safeties, but what's great about him is you can have him as that fourth safety slash, kind of floating defensive back type of guy. And if Von Bell gets injured 1 week or Marcus Williams, worst case scenario, now you got another kid who's talented, who arguably could become an NFL starting caliber safety within his first 2 or 3 years in the league. So, again, man, just hats off to him. Just fantastic.
Talking to Barry Herstis, our boy Barry from the Saints News Network and Big Easy Magazine. Barry, seventh rounders are usually guys that are going to be scout team guys for at least a couple years. Maybe they give some depth. They got the kid, the linebacker, Idaho, but they also got themselves a tight end. And a lot of the narrative for the offseason was tight end, tight end, tight end, tight end, tight end, tight end, tight end. And they end up taking one, but it's a seventh round guy from Notre Dame. Any chance in hell that this cat is even going to make it on the team, or is he going to be a scout team guy? Your thoughts on the pick, young man out of Notre Dame?
Ironically, you should mention him because I just covered it this morning at Saints News Network, except now if you log on to Saints News Network, I have the Alizé Mac article up. I think he's going to make the team. I think, but he's going to be the number three tight end. I think, obviously, Jared Cook will start. I think Josh Hill, obviously, has got the number two spot locked down. And it's going to be a dogfight. It's going to be a dogfight in camp for that number three spot between Mac and Dan Arnold and Garrett Griffin. Now, if I was handicapping it, you'd probably say, well, if maybe you give the slight edge to Griffin or Dan Arnold because they have, the year experience in the system. But look, this guy, I get it that he didn't do much in Notre Dame, but what people are missing about this kid, and I mentioned it in the article, just because he didn't put up big numbers at Notre Dame, you got to think about the type of offense that Notre Dame runs and Brian Kelly and their somewhat conservative approach to offense at times. I mean, Brian Kelly doesn't strike you as a guy with a wide open, maybe Chip Kelly, not Brian Kelly. So, you think Notre Dame, you think, power football, great defense, but, and true to that outlook, that's how he was utilized. Now, as a senior last year, he put up a little bit bigger numbers. They targeted him a little bit more often. They opened things up a bit. Obviously, they went undefeated and made the CFP playoffs. But This is a young man who has a ton of untapped potential, especially as a receiver. What his problem is, and the reason why he lasted into the seventh round, is because he is not a very good route runner. He's a, I mean, he's basically, he lines up and he just runs. Yeah, it would be like if you were a kid and they tell you, and your dad tells you, all right, just line up on the right side and go run as fast as you can and go get the ball. And it's pretty much like that. So he needs to develop route running and stuff, but he's, man, he's phenomenal in a receiving game. So if this is a mighty big if, because you're right, seventh round pick, we know how hard it is to make this roster. But if that kid, and he's getting a great position coach with Dan Campbell, can you get any better coaching if you're a tight end coming into the NFL as a rookie than Dan Campbell? So I believe Dan Campbell is going to coach this kid up, and you know, and then Jared Cook's going to be mentoring him. I think if the kid can learn how to run better routes, you could see him eventually down the line. I'm not talking about this year or next, obviously, but you know, 2022, 2023, you very possibly, if he makes it, see Alizé Mack as the future number one tight end for the Saints. Now, I could be wrong about that, so let's keep that in mind.
I got you, Barry. I got you, man. Look.
Hey, I had to throw that caveat in there.
You are a friend of the program. Again, we will not hold that against you.
He didn't have eye-popping numbers by any means. But, again, just watch the tape. Just go. All you got to do, and I've even got it in the article this morning, just click on the video and watch what I'm talking about, and you'll see what the Saints saw in this kid.
One more question before we let you go, Barry. You mentioned, you know, the undrafted rookie free agents. The Saints have had success in the past. Pierre Thomas comes to mind. Lance Moore comes to mind as guys that they've gotten. Chris Ivory. The guys that have gone undrafted. Who stands out to you of the group of guys that they signed that you think could possibly make this roster?
A couple of them. That article is also up at Big Easy Magazine. I think little Jordan Humphrey, who ironically is not little at all, is very comparable in size to Marcus Colston. You know, he was the top receiver in Texas Longhorns offense as a senior. Really didn't do much his first few years, but kind of like Mac, he didn't really, you know, he kind of rode the bench and didn't really come on until he got the opportunity and got more playing time and more snaps as a senior. But you know, we were talking about guys like Hakeem Butler. You know, a big receiver, the Harmon kid out of North Carolina State. Well, little Jordan Humphrey is in that class of receiver, the big receiver. I mean, look, I don't want to hang, you know, obviously, we got, you know, all of the camps and the OTAs and all this to work all this stuff out. But brother, can you imagine Michael Thomas on one side and the Humphrey kid on the other side? Oh man, that's, how do you defend that? So, you know, I like that pick. Another pick I like, even though some Saints fans are a little puzzled by it, and that would be, or not the pick, but the signing, I should say, is Granderson, the edge rusher from Wyoming, who to me would be a perfect replacement for Alex Okafor. As we know, Alex Okafor signed with Kansas City in free agency, so they still need a backup behind Davenport, basically, because I guess Trey Hendrickson would be your backup for Cam Jordan. So, but to me, Granderson has the talent to make this roster. But as we know, he's got pending charges for sexual assault. Now, the Saints gave him a $75,000 guarantee along with a bonus. Now, you don't give that kind of money to a guy if you don't think he's going to come play for you because he's got legal issues. So I don't know what they know, and Mickey or Sean haven't revealed it yet or have even really discussed it since then. I think one of the guys mentioned it in his post-draft press conference. He didn't really touch on it much, but me personally, I don't think the Saints would have signed Granderson if they felt that his legal issues could cause a bad outlook for them, so to speak, as a franchise. We know that the Saints, very notably in recent years, have avoided players with those type of history. So the only thing I can surmise out of that signing is that they know something we don't. So, but Granderson, Humphrey, there's a kid named, I believe it's Darnell Holland out of Kennesaw State. Check him out. I think I got some highlights of him on there. Just phenomenal. So, now we, as we know, only two UDFAs, undrafted guys made it last year with, Taylor Stallworth and Keith Kirkwood. If I was handicapping it, I'd probably say maybe two or three out of this current undrafted class will make it. But if I were picking out, if I were going to pick them specifically, I would say Humphrey, the receiver from Texas, and Granderson, the edge rusher from Wyoming.
Barry, appreciate it as always, brother. Thank you for the in-depth analysis. And get you some rest this weekend, brother. Yeah, no draft going on.
I'm going to take it easy this weekend. I might even stray out and about and get a little barbecue this weekend. I hear some grills are getting fired up, so good time to try it out.
And you make sure you send some of that our way, brother.
Oh, absolutely.
That's Barry Hursis from the Saints News Network and Big Easy Magazine joining us here on RP3 and Company. We got to hit a break here on 103.7 The Game. Second hour is in the books. Third hour, final hour coming up. We're going to kick things off with Michael Chamberlain of Evangeline Downs here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parks III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Pro Football Hall of Famer Ricky Jackson.
I tell you what, man, I was out playing basketball, and a lot of guys came and told me Saints drafted you, and they looking for you. I had forgot all about the draft.
UFC superstar Dustin the Diamond Poirier.
It means everything to me. You know, Lafayette, Louisiana, I was born and raised. I'm a Cajun. I love it. I can't wait to walk to the airport with that dog.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Welcome to the third and final hour of RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 Stadium Sports Network. Typically, we'd go out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline for a guest, but we are privileged to have our next guest in studio live this morning. He is in his fifth season as the track announcer at Evangeline Downs Racetrack and Casino, right down the road in Opelousas. They're gearing up for a big weekend, obviously, for the Kentucky Derby, but they also have the Louisiana Legends Night coming up on Memorial Day weekend, Saturday, May the 25th. Also, the Evangeline Mile race coming up in June, on June 22nd. It's our privilege to welcome on to the program Michael Chamberlain. Michael, how are you this morning?
Doing great. Thank you for having me in studio today.
Not a problem. Appreciate you making some time. I know it's busy, and I want you to dive into what's coming up there at the local racetrack at Evangeline Downs, big marquee events and what's coming up there. I want to get to that. But first, I want to get your thoughts, obviously, on the Kentucky Derby this weekend. We've had now not one but two races in the field of the 20 they're running for the Roses have been scratched. The favorite, Omaha Beach, got scratched yesterday, and now we had another one scratched this morning. How much does that kind of, obviously, when the favorite jumps out, you know, that throws everything else into kind of a tizzy. From your perspective, how common is that to have these late scratches, and how common is it to have a favorite like that be scratched just a few days out?
That doesn't happen all that often. The last time I can remember it happening was, I believe it was 2009, a horse named I Want Revenge was the very heavy favorite going into Kentucky Derby week, and he drew into the field and then had to be scratched. And if we all remember correctly, in 2009, that was the year Mind That Bird won it.
Right.
The second longest shot in the history of the race to win. I don't necessarily think that'll happen this time around, but having the favorite scratch really has a big impact on this race because Omaha Beach was more or less going to be my pick. I think his two races that he had run at Oaklawn Park up in Arkansas were just tremendous, and the mettle that he showed in holding off the challenges that he had in those races really showed that he had some very strong fortitude to just go on and run his race and not worry about anybody else around him. And that's such an important thing when it comes to the Kentucky Derby, because it's the biggest field you're ever going to face.
Right.
And it's a distance that isn't very commonly run anymore, at a mile and a quarter. It's a very strong test for a really young horse. If you want to put it in terms of another sport or something, it's kind of like a freshman college football player. I would almost say maybe in the Ivy League or in Division I AA, going out and getting drafted by the Kansas City Chiefs and expected to catch passes from Pat Mahomes on opening week of the season. So it's going to be a really big experience for all of these horses and these connections and everything. To have that taken away, to lose Omaha Beach, and now the horse right to what would have been his inside, number 11, Haikal, has also been scratched out of the race. We're down to a field of 19, which is better as far as traffic is concerned for the horses, because there's not as many horses out on the racetrack. You maybe see some horses get a better trip that maybe you wouldn't have expected that with a bigger field.
Michael, tell me a little bit about, by my standards, odds are, last time I checked, were 15 to 1. But this was a horse that is getting a little buzz, is wowing while training at Churchill Downs. This is also a horse that was a 22-1 shot to win the Louisiana Derby, which he did.
Yes.
Is that, from your perspective, is that a horse, by my standards, is that a horse that could win the Run for the Roses Saturday?
Well, the interesting thing about the Louisiana Derby this year is I think that the Louisiana Derby, as opposed to some years in the past, is actually a key race coming into the Kentucky Derby. If you look back through the annals of the Louisiana Derby, only two horses that have won at the fairgrounds in the Louisiana Derby have gone on to win the Kentucky Derby. One was 1924, which, yes, 1924.
We all remember that.
A horse named Black Gold, who is still revered at the fairgrounds, by the way. I believe he's actually buried in the infield. And the other one was Grindstone in 1996, who won the closest photo finish in the history of the Kentucky Derby, if I'm not mistaken, that year as well. And by my standards, an interesting note about this horse, by the way, the trainer, Brett Calhoun, won a stakes race at Evangeline Downs just last week. He's got some local connections. He does run horses not only here but throughout Louisiana and Texas. So it's really good to see a guy like that up with the big boys now in this race. And by my standards, certainly has a possibility to win. I think another horse I like in there was the horse that was the runner up in the Louisiana Derby, named Spinoff. He's going to be breaking from outside. He got the number 19. Post position, and now the post positions are a little jumbled with those two scratches.
Right.
He'll be breaking, I believe, from the 18 slot. I think he's got a good shot. And the horse that the two scratches benefits the most is a horse named War of Will. And War of Will had won three in a row, including the two prep races for the Louisiana Derby at the fairgrounds, the LeCompte Stakes and the Risen Star.
But had a misstep at the Derby.
He didn't
run
at the Louisiana Derby. He ran a bad race. It's really the only bad race he's run, at kind of a mystery performance. It just wasn't really up to snuff. But he's gone up to Kentucky and trained great. And then when they had the draw on Tuesday, he drew the number one post position at the rail. And no one has won the Kentucky Derby from the number one post position since 1986. So
why is that? Why is that such a...
What happens in... The reason this is his benefit, I'm glad you asked that question, is what happens is the field of 20, the number one post position, they have to start on the inside rail at the of the racetrack. And actually, they've shown this on NBC during the coverage before in the past. He's actually inside of the rail. So if he were to go straight out from the number one post position, he would run smack into the rail at Churchill Downs. Now, so clearly you can't do that. So you have two options. One, you have to go and just go expend as much energy as possible to get up and get the lead. Or two, you have to take back and sit off the pace and try to make your one big run coming around everybody. Now, a couple of years ago, a horse named Looking at Lee did that and ran a very good second at big odds and created some really nice payouts when Always Dreaming won the Derby. But there are other instances where, for example, 2007, a horse named, I'm sorry, 2010, my mistake, 2010, a horse named Looking at Lucky was one of the heavy favorites going in. He was the runner-up in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile the year before. He drew number one, and he just got annihilated coming out of the gate, and he got slammed a couple of more times on the rail, and he ended up having the worst possible Derby trip possible. But and I think he ended up running sixth after all that, which was a tremendous effort. The following Triple Crown race 2 weeks later in the Preakness, he won. So he was clearly one of the cream of the crop that year that just ended up getting the absolute worst of the post position draw. And as a result of that happening, lost all chances to win the Kentucky Derby. Now with War of Will, with those two scratches, everything contracts in the middle and he gets to move out from the rail. So he's going to end up with a little bit of a cleaner trip. And I think that that actually helps his chances. And he's a live long shot. So the three horses that are in this race out of the Louisiana Derby at the fairgrounds, By My Standards, Spinoff, and War of Will, all have legitimate shots to win tomorrow.
We're talking with Michael Chamberlain. He's the Evangeline Downs racetrack announcer. Michael, Bob Baffert, the famous trainer, or infamous, however you'd like to look at it. He's won the Derby. He's had horses win the Derby five times. He has three in the field this time around. Many of them are considered favorites. Improbable seems to be at the top of that list. Is this Derby Bob Baffert versus himself again?
I think he's going to have the three betting favorites in this race with Improbable, Game Winner, and Roadster. They're all possess their own strengths. Okay. And I think the best of the three myself, I think, is actually Game Winner. He won the Breeders' Cup Juvenile last fall on this racetrack. He will run a good race regardless. He always does that. He lost to Omaha Beach in Arkansas by a nose, and then he was second to Roadster in the Santa Anita Derby in April. So the oddity of this is he probably is going to be the favorite in the race, and he hasn't won yet this year. That doesn't happen that often. Hmm. He's won four. He won his first four starts, went 4-for-4 last year. This year, he's 0-for-2. He's finished second both times, and he's probably going to be the favorite in that group. Improbable, I think, ends up being the second choice in the race. He ran second to Omaha Beach in the Arkansas Derby, and as I mentioned, you know, Omaha Beach, he was the one of the horses that just couldn't get by him. He just couldn't do it. But now that Omaha Beach isn't there, it clears up the path for him. And the third one, Roadster. Roadster is 3-for-4 in his career. Won the Santa Anita Derby last time out. And you know, it's Baffert comes in with a hot hand every year.
Every year.
And you know, it would be the sixth time he wins this race. If he wins tomorrow, he's got three legitimate shots to do it. And it wouldn't surprise me if he took home the roses again.
It wouldn't surprise you, but it also wouldn't surprise you if another horse in the field won, because Baffert, as great as he's been, he's also had runs where he's had favorites come in,
yes,
and they don't even place.
The biggest example of that is Point Given,
right,
which came back in 2001, and what happened that year was, it was a suicidal pace up front. It was the fastest half mile in the history of the Derby to that point. They ran the half mile, I believe, in 44 and change, which is blistering for a mile and a quarter race. I mean,
right,
you run 44 and change for a 6-furlong race, so then you got to tack on another half mile to go a mile and a quarter. So the horses that were up near the pace were basically fried by the time they got into the stretch, and Point Given had been up closer to the pace that day, which allowed Monarcos, a horse from off the pace and off the pack, to come through and win the Kentucky Derby that year at a fairly decent price. So that was probably the one horse that he has had that, and he's won two Triple Crowns now with American Pharoah and Justin.
Right.
So we're not shedding any tears for the man.
No, nor should you.
No, but of all the horses that he has had through the years, and that includes Silver Charm and Real Quiet and the other horses that have won the Derby. Point Given, I think, was the best of the bunch that probably should have won the Triple Crown, but it didn't happen.
Give me a horse that you feel maybe can't win, but there's always a horse that surprises us at the Derby by either placing.
Yes.
There's always someone that one of those favorites falls out and they finish in fifth or sixth, and there's always a horse that kind of comes out and people are like, hey, and it's good. It's a little extra cash in someone's back pocket. Who do you like?
I'll give you two of those.
Okay.
I have two of them that I really think could possibly surprise. One of them is a horse I already mentioned named Spinoff.
Right.
He is by Hard Spun, who is my favorite sire going right now. Hard Spun ran second in the Derby to Street Sense in 2007.
I remember that.
And what the best thing about Hard Spun was if he could see you, you weren't getting by him. Street Sense kind of snuck up on him and rolled by him in the Derby and just he couldn't do anything about it. But Hard Spun was a tough son of a gun. And his progeny have that same quality. If they're ahead of you, it's going to be really tough for you to get by them. And I think that is such a very key factor in a lot of these races where, you know, they come down, you know, head and head, and he just is going to find a way to beat you. And I like that about that horse. And the other one that I'm hearing a lot of this week, a lot of people like, is a horse named Cutting Humor. Which is the number 10 horse. Both of these are Todd Pletcher trainees, by the way.
Okay.
This one, Cutting Humor, will have Corey Lannery aboard, who was the jockey, I might add, on Looking at Lee, who I talked about a little bit ago that ran second just a couple of years ago. This horse won the Sunland Derby in New Mexico, which is the route that Mind That Bird took to the Kentucky Derby back in 2009. And he's 30-1 on the morning line, and I know the morning line has been altered a little bit, so that may have gone down now. With the result of those two scratches. But he did have three bullet workouts in a row, which is the fastest workout of a particular morning at the particular place you're working at. And he's going to provide a big price, and he could be one of those horses that just kind of clunks up there and runs second or third and really brings some big payouts for you.
Talking to Michael Chamberlain, he's the Evangeline Downs track announcer. Michael, for the folks that want to experience a good time, can't go to Churchill Downs, obviously, they can come out to Evangeline Downs this weekend. What are you guys doing? Anything special on Derby Day?
Well, we have actually, for Derby Day, we've altered our post time. Normally, we start at 5:50 on our first race.
Okay.
And we have moved that up to 5:35 because the Kentucky Derby is supposed to go at about 5:50. And, you know, we're not the sharpest tools in the shed, but we're not going to run our race right on top of the Kentucky Derby. So we're going to move it back and give people a chance to come out, watch our first race, and then we're going to take maybe a half hour and just kind of gap between the first and the second race. Everyone can watch the Kentucky Derby, enjoy that, and then we'll come back with the remainder of our race card, which includes the $75,000 Equine Sales Derby, which features horses which went through the sales ring at the Equine Sales Center up here off of I-49 on exit 15. And we are also going to have our Silks Clubhouse Buffet for $25 per person. The clubhouse is opening at 3 o'clock tomorrow, so early. You know, we're getting early. And you must have advance reservations.
Okay.
So you need to call 337-594-6007 to get those reservations. And if you don't have reservations, you're just not going to get in the clubhouse because it's going to be SRO, standing room only. The Derby is always that way. And on the menu, we've got prime rib, Kentucky Burgoo stew, which I know Burgoo is a delicacy in Kentucky. I have no idea what's in it. The only thing I know about Burgoo is that there was a horse in 1932 named Burgoo King that won the Kentucky Derby. That's as far as I go with Burgoo. Catfish, crawfish etouffee, great desserts, and of course the clubhouse affords the best views of the live racing too.
Right.
So you come, watch the Derby, and stick around and watch the live races and enjoy your Saturday that way. We also have two handicapping contests, which are going to be interesting. One of them is the $1 Million Derby Pick, which is going to take place from noon until 5:30, and you could win up to $1 million by picking the exact order of finish in the Kentucky Derby. Exact.
I mean, yeah, for right. all the horses.
Well, I think we're kind of limiting it to the top eight. So if you get the top eight, you're in good shape, and you could win up to $1 million. But you must be a Be Connected card member. We
okay.
have a card that we have called the Be Connected card, which we use to give our fans, you know, rewards and that kind of stuff. So you must have that in order to take part in either contest. The other contest, our Derby Day Handicapping Contest, will include several races from Churchill Downs that you must make selections on. And if you take part in that one, you will receive a mint julep glass with the 145th Kentucky Derby logo on it, as well as the list of every winner ever of the Kentucky Derby. They put it on this glass and, like, type about yay big.
Nice.
And it really is nice. And it's going to be a fabulous day tomorrow out at Evangeline Downs. As I said, we're moving post time up. Clubhouse opens at 3, and you know, we've got all kinds of great experiences going on. And of course, you know, at Evangeline Downs, we have plenty of other stuff going on with the casino and our restaurants and everything. So it's going to be a full, fun day at the races tomorrow. We're hoping everyone can come out and join us.
Michael, I appreciate you making some time for us here on 103.7 The Game. And have a blast calling the races and watching the race as well.
Absolutely.
On Saturday.
Will do.
As Michael Chamberlain, Evangeline Downs track announcer, joining us here, giving us a little bit of Derby preview as well as letting us know what's going on over at the local track. When we come back here, we'll talk a little Raging Cajun softball on 103.7 The Game. In Louisiana, there are thousands of miles of utility lines and gas pipelines buried just beneath the surface. Sometimes multiple lines are in one area. So if you or a contractor you've hired is digging a hole to put in a new fence, a pool, or for another reason, you run the risk of hitting an underground line even by digging only a few inches. What happens then? Maybe you only knock power out for your entire neighborhood, but sometimes there's an explosion with injuries and even death. It happens every year, and there's a very simple way to avoid it. Before you dig, call 811. Call 811 2 days before you dig. Tell the operator your address, and someone will come out and mark the location of buried lines so you or your contractor can avoid them. Simple, right? It's free of charge, and it's the law. Louisiana One Call operates 811 as a public service, and to promote public safety, Louisiana One Call and 103.7 The Game remind you, call 811 and know what's below before you dig. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. Terrific insight there from our good friend Michael Chamberlain, the track announcer at Evangeline Downs. We appreciate him coming live in studio, giving us a bit of a Kentucky Derby preview, and letting us know what's going over at Evangeline Downs.
Burgoo, according to Wikipedia, this will explain it to you. Its alternate name, Roadkill Soup.
So,
there you go. Mutton, possum, things of that nature. It's like a gumbo, but not a gumbo.
Yeah.
So, cabbage, potatoes, these things involved. It's a stew with the lesser animals. If you order it in a restaurant, though, Wikipedia says you get, like, chicken and stuff in it. So there's that.
I like how you describe that. The lesser animals.
I don't know. The game meat. I don't know what to call it.
Raccoon, possum.
Yes, raccoon, possum. Not rabbit, though. Rabbit's good.
Rabbit's pretty good.
Yeah, Rabbit's
not. Yeah, all right. So, UL women's softball team is phenomenal, be the best way to describe it. They are the number 8 ranked team in the country. Now, they're wrapping up the regular season as we speak with a 3-game set at UL Monroe. They actually are playing Thursday, Friday, Saturday. They're wrapping up early because, I want to say, selection... regional selection will be Sunday, if I am correct there. Well, I know I'm going to blow you away. You're going to screech to a halt in your automobile if you're driving right now. You may fall out of your chair if you're listening inside your office. Summer Ellison is really good at throwing a softball. She was the highlight of the series opening contest between the Raging Cajuns and the Warhawks. She struck out 16. It sends Louisiana's win streak to 24 games. They're 47-4 overall, 25-0 in Sun Belt play. And Summer's now 34-4 overall with an ERA of 0.98. 0.98. Yeah, phenomenal. They'll look to go ahead and clinch the series tonight up there in Monroe. So congratulations to the Raging Cajuns for another convincing victory. 3-0 last night behind Summer Ellison's 16 strikeout performance. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, Tyler Nunes will join us on 103.7 The Game. Coming down the home stretch here for RP3 and Company on this Friday edition here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. I am your host, Raymond Parks III. Cody Schutz is the man behind the music, behind the microphones, behind the glass. He's the man behind the man, which would make him, in wrestling terms, a manager?
Or Becky Lynch.
Or Becky Lynch. There it is. There it is. Well, it's time to wrap up the show in a strong fashion, as we do every Friday. We're going to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our final guest of the day. He covers LSU athletics for Tiger Rag. It's the one and only Tyler Nunes. Tyler, how are you this morning, brother?
I'm good, man. How are you guys doing?
Good. I feel me and Cody feel a lot better right now that you actually were able to pick up the phone and that you're in a safe and secure location, because I know last week there were helicopters after you, and the federal government was trying to chase you through a bachelor party extravaganza. So we're happy that you're safe and sound, brother.
Yeah. I made it through. It was a long weekend, but I survived somehow.
There's going to be stories off there that we can discuss.
Oh, for sure.
So, Tyler, let's get to the news. It's a little old now, but let's get to the news from earlier in the week about Will Wade. This just refuses to go away. Just when we think we've gotten to a point where there's nothing else to be revealed, that there's no charges, that he's been reinstated, that we're moving forward with this, we have another convicted felon mentioning him in great details in court. Your thoughts on what was said in court earlier this week concerning Will Wade from the former Arizona assistant coach?
Well, I mean, as far as things go in this situation, we knew it wasn't going to go away completely. So, like, just putting that aside, this is about as innocuous of something that we've seen so far, just because, I mean, we're talking about a convicted felon here, a guy who's been kind of known to spout his mouth off, and we don't know how credible any of this is. The $300,000 thing is kind of the biggest warning sign, just because, I mean, we're talking about Zion Williamson getting like $200,000, $250,000. So the idea that Nas Reed would be getting $300,000, either Will Wade is a horrible negotiator or something's a little fishy and not quite right. So it's one of those situations where this is about as clean as Will Wade could have come out of this so far. The fact that Christian Dawkins took the stand for the last 2 days and never mentioned his name once, huge for Will Wade. That turned from what could have been the worst possible situation for Will to probably the best. So he's actually looking in a lot better shape at the end of this week than he did on Tuesday when that news broke.
Were you surprised, as this week has gone on, that Dawkins did not, in fact, mention Will Wade while he was on the stand?
I mean, I did, because every national reporter in the country was telling me that this was going to be the fireworks show whenever he took the stand for Will Wade. You know, like, I thought that everyone
just
promised me this.
Just a little bit of contempt in your voice there, Tyler, but good job. I do.
Well, I mean, I'm just like everyone in the country, everyone at Yahoo, everyone at ESPN was telling me that it was over for Will Wade as soon as Christian Dawkins took the stand, and if he did, Will Wade was going to be, you know, out of there. And then, like, he talks for 2 straight days, and Will Wade doesn't even come up. So I don't know really what to think of this entire situation. The good news for Will Wade is none of the allegations levied against him have any corroborating evidence. And so right now it looks like LSU can just kind of sit on their heels and wait for something more substantial to come about. But I see no reason to not move forward as planned.
And in a grand scheme of things, everything that's come out this week, it's far worse for Sean Miller at Arizona.
Right.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's the damning evidence that's come out, right? He's a guy that's probably going to lose his job. We're talking with Tyler Nunes of Tiger Rag. Tyler, are we to expect maybe down the road, because the NCAA does not do anything quickly, and they've been extremely quiet through this whole process, which is, you know, going on 8 months or whatever it may be, do we anticipate some type of investigation by the NCAA to take place, or is this something that's just going to... Right. But do you think that's going to take, you know, we'll find out the results of this investigation when, like 2023, we're going to go ahead and pencil that in?
Well, it's not even going to start until the FBI is done. So we've got a while. There's probably at least another trial that we're going to have to sit through. And then if anything else comes up, we'll have to see. But the FBI asked the NCAA to kind of lay low and kind of stay out of their way while they conduct this investigation. And so we're not going to see the NCAA get involved until all this is over. So we've got a little while. And then as you alluded to, NCAA investigations tend to take a while. So unless they've got a lot of kind of groundwork done in the background, I expect this to be a while before anything kind of comes to.
Tyler, when is the deadline for the guys that have declared for the NBA or declared for the NBA draft to be able to come back to school? When is that deadline, and what are you hearing with your sources with how many of those guys you feel are actually going to come back?
May 29th is the deadline for most of them. Unless they get invited to the NBA draft combine, then they have until the Monday after the NBA draft if they don't get drafted. So, But four of those guys at least aren't going to be invited to the combine, and I think that four of them will be coming back. That's the general thinking right now. Whether or not they choose to transfer afterwards, that's a completely different situation. But I think you can count on at least four of those guys coming back. I think Nas and Tremont are gone, but Skylar Mays, Emmett Williams, Marlon Taylor, and Javonte Smart, they should all be back in the LSU uniform come June.
And that's a heck of a nucleus to come back to campus for. And obviously, they lose Big B Williams to graduation. Nas is declared he's going to be a first rounder, and Tremont maybe a second rounder. But they still have a good core coming back that earned a lot of minutes, have played well together. Who are they looking at who's going to be coming in recruit-wise that's going to be added to that mix for next year's LSU team?
Well, the two recruits they have signed right now are Charles Manning and James Bishop. James Bishop is the bigger of the two names. Manning is a JUCO transfer. He'll be fine. Bishop is a really sharp shooter, something they were missing last year. That's a piece that Will Wade was really excited about. He went to Baltimore to go watch him play multiple times. And then you can't forget, they've got Andre Hyatt and Cortez Cooper that were just sitting on the bench all year this past season. So those two guys are expected to add a lot. And then on top of that, they're still trying to sign guys. The biggest name, of course, is Trenton Watford. He's a five-star guy out of Alabama, and it looks like it's down to LSU or Memphis. And we're going to see probably in the next week or so where he decides to go.
And, you know, it comes down to basically Will Wade, LSU, and, of course, Penny Hardaway, which Penny's getting a ton of pub and buzz about and what he's trying to do. How big of a deal is that? I mean, obviously LSU has a good team, but is that the type of guy that is – give me a comparison here, Tyler. Is he on the level of kind of being a generational kind of talent, this kid, or is he more of just a really good player?
He's a great player. I mean, what he does, it's kind of tough to tell with these high school recruits. Every year we get excited about guys, and we're not really sure how they're going to pan out. So I try to stay away from that. But he has potential to be one of the best players in the country next season. I mean, he's one of the most highly sought out recruits. His top five involves Memphis. It involves Duke. I mean, to have LSU in there is something that we haven't seen in Baton Rouge in a really long time. So if he does end up landing at LSU, he's going to be a big difference maker. He's going to be at least the Nas Reed of this class.
Talking to Tyler Nunes of Tiger Rag. Tyler, let's keep it with recruiting, but let's switch over to football. Earlier this week, 247 declared LSU having the number one ranked recruiting class for the 2020 season, not only in the SEC, but overall. Due to a big strength of the wide receivers that they're bringing in and the guys that they're getting, not only are they getting really good wide receiver recruits to verbally commit, they're getting guys West Coast, East Coast, and everywhere in between. A lot of people are giving credit to Joe Brady, the former New Orleans Saints assistant that Ed O has brought on as a passing game coordinator and essentially a recruiter. What kind of impact? Is this already the impact that we're seeing from Joe Brady?
I think it's a case of Ed Orgeron setting him up and Joe Brady knocking him down. You can't forget that one of Ed Orgeron's biggest assets as a head football coach is he's got pipelines all over the country. He's coached everywhere from Syracuse to Miami to USC. He's recruited there, and so he's got connections all over the country, and I think he's been able to utilize Joe Brady by sending him to these guys. I mean, he's got a young 29-year-old guy. He's a guy who's not that much older than relatively to these high school guys who are trying to make these big decisions, and I think that a guy that young can, and a guy as exciting as he is, can get these guys excited about coming to LSU. And I mean, it's worked wonders so far. So you can't leave Ed Orgeron out of the equation. But I think Joe Brady has done a really good job of executing the plan.
Wide receiver seems to be a position that they are targeting and targeting well. They got three of the top guys in the entire country. One of those guys has been a longtime verbal commit, Kayshawn Boutte from Westgate there in New Iberia, kind of a local product. Mm-hmm. Why do you think all of a sudden there's been such an emphasis on wide receiver, in particular for this class?
I think it goes back to Joe Brady again. I think Ed Orgeron hired Joe Brady with the intention of changing LSU's passing game. This is the first time since I've been covering LSU over the last 7 years, or at least keeping up with them, we've heard multiple times that we're going to see a better passing game, a new passing game. We want to play a spread. Well, Ed Orgeron spent all last year saying he wanted to run the spread, but didn't have the personnel or the coaching to do it. Now he's got the personnel, and he got Joe Brady to go and help him get more of that personnel and to set up a new offensive scheme. And the way I hear it, I mean, he's right. He's working really closely with Steve Ensminger, LSU's offensive coordinator, and if things go the way they want them to, it looks like LSU is going to be a much more pass-heavy team in the future.
Yeah, and that is trending. I know Brady's arrival was heralded by a lot of the guys on the staff. Look, anytime you get to work with Sean Payton and Drew Brees, that's going to carry a lot of weight, right? When you walk into a room and you have that on your resume, guys take notice. And I know Joe Burrow is a big fan as well. Talk a little bit about Tyler. You know, obviously the recruiting is ratcheting up. It just feels like this program is trending in the right direction. How surprised are you just how well this program under Ed O has recovered from a couple years ago when they got curb stomped by Mississippi State and, of course, lost at home to Troy when everyone was calling for Ed O to be fired? Here we are.
Yeah.
Now a 10-win season, Fiesta Bowl victory, number one recruiting class, got a guy that's worked with Drew Brees and the Saints. It sure does feel like LSU is ascending, and it didn't take that long for Ed O to do that.
You know, and I think that Ed Orgeron was just kind of biding his time, waiting for a second chance. And I think that I was excited about it because I saw what he did at USC, and the fact that they didn't give him the head coaching job was kind of absurd to me. So I think that he was waiting. I think what Ed Orgeron's really good at is delegating. I think he knows what everyone's good at. I think he knows what he's good at, and I think
he's learned that, though, right, Tyler? He's learned that because that was the knock on him at Ole Miss, is that he didn't delegate enough, and when he got to USC, he learned how to delegate again, especially during the interim.
Yeah, absolutely. And but, I mean, he's done an excellent job of it. That's why he went out and got a guy like Joe Brady, because he knows that there's something that Joe Brady can add that he can't. And that's an excellent value to have in a head coach. You know, I mean, it's like the president of the United States, right? You need a bunch of people to do a lot of stuff that you can't really do yourself. So I think that he's done a really, really good job of hiring to his weaknesses, and that's really what you need as a head coach.
Tyler, we'll wrap it up with this. Talked LSU basketball, LSU football, talked recruiting. But I need to know, and our listenership, the people out there of Acadiana need to know, do you absolutely love the new gimmick by Bray Wyatt? Because myself and Cody Schutz are huge fans of the demented Mr. Rogers neighborhood thing that they're got going on there. I need your thoughts.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing how the WWE screws it up. But right now, it's a lot of fun.
It's so good, right? It's so good.
Yeah. I mean, I've thought about Bray Wyatt like 10 times before, so we'll see. I love Bray Wyatt. I hope that I hope this gimmick finally gives him the success he deserves. We'll see. I'm hesitant to go all in on it.
Oh, but I love the gimmick. It is gold.
Oh, it's great.
It's great.
It's great.
Tyler, brother, Appreciate you making time for us. Glad that you evaded authorities and everything is safe and that you survived the bachelor party weekend. And we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Sounds good, guys. Y'all have a good one.
You too, brother. Tyler Nunes, Tiger Rag.
Always bringing it.
Always bringing it.
I'm going to have to go back to the Irish themes, though, to bring him in because he didn't comment on this theme. I played him a Canadian guy this time around. I guess Tyler Nunes doesn't like Canada.
He doesn't like Canada. I love it.
You brought up Bray Wyatt at the end there, which I appreciate because I was curious. I'm curious to hear every wrestling fan's opinion on this because it's such a polarizing deal. So thank you for – Tyler shares a similar opinion to the two of us. Or for me, for sure, very excited about it. Can't wait to see where it goes from here. But also, the WWE longtime fans in us know that it's just a matter of time before they screw this up. Hopefully not, but probably so. We talked about it yesterday. If you want to hear my theory on the Firefly Funhouse, it is up right now. You can check it out, the 20x20 ProGraps podcast, parental advisory. Sometimes we get a little attitude error with the language. I apologize. But check that out. Yeah, exactly. But I've got, check that out. My theory's up there. Clint's got a theory about Dean Ambrose, who just left WWE and has rebranded himself as John Moxley.
But really, we want people to go to check out your theory. World famous. Look, the world famous Clint D is going to debut his new show on Saturday.
Right.
Okay. Make sure to listen to it right here on 103.7 The Game. It's replacing the producers. It's called Under the Dome with CD. Check it out. So he's going to have his moment in the sun.
Time.
Okay.
But what if I told you that his theory involved the John Moxley video on Twitter and involves the overdose of old boy at the Viper Room. What's the other Phoenix? I can't remember his first name.
It was
now.
River.
River's Phoenix, yeah. It also deals with his OD at the Viper Room.
And so. Johnny Depp owned the Viper Room at that time, by the way.
Johnny Depp's a weird cat.
We're going to close things out after this break. Here on 103.7 The Game.
Oh, no, I forgot, Raymond. No. Your thing. Hold on. I'm going to queue it up. Don't worry. We're not out of time. Dude, go.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company. I am Raymond Parts III. This is 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 Stadium Network. Yes, Cody.
That's better. It's Friday. I dropped the ball on that one, but better late than never. Happy Friday. The weekend is upon us.
Better late than never. Better late than never.
I mean, I don't feel like the Friday can officially get started until we hit a little ice cube for you on a Friday.
That's right. That's how we do things.
Oh, yeah. Kentucky Derby weekend.
That's right. Programming reminder, real quick. Jordy Holtberg's show with Uncle Jordy will be from 2 to 4 today. The good brother Ben Love himself will be live from Ruffino's on the river. You know the deal. Great food, great beverages. Ben will have great guests. That's how it works. Go see him live or listen to it. From 4 to 6:30, Bumper to Bumper Sports B2BS will be at Ruffino's on the river. That will lead you into LSU versus Ole Miss pregame 6:30. First pitch 7 for the three-game series against the Rebels. Saturday, Under the Dome with the world-famous CD debuts from 10 to noon. The new show from our one and only Clint Domain will debut. We'll also have Kentucky Derby coverage via Westwood One starting at 4 o'clock. Pre-race coverage leads you up to gate, which will be around 5:45 through at the end of the race at 6 o'clock. That'll go over to LSU once again. Game 2 with Ole Miss pregame at 6, first pitch at 6:30. And then we'll also have LSU Ole Miss wrap up on Sunday, pregame 2, first pitch 2:30. If you're looking for the Stros and you're like, well, they lost that series, the four-game series. They dropped 3 of 4 after splitting with Cleveland. Then they lose 3 of 4 to Minnesota. They're going to try to get things back on track this weekend south of the border. They're going to be playing 2 games
Arriba.
Against the Los Angeles County Credit Union Poinsettia Bowl Angels.
Angelos.
Angelos. two-game set with the Angels down in Mexico. You can listen to both of those games Saturday and Sunday on our sister station, KVOL, The Rewind, 97.7 FM, 1330 AM, and 104.1 in Lake Chuck. Saturday, 5:30, pregame. Sunday, 2:30, pregame. Been a terrific week. Appreciate all the callers. Appreciate all the guests. Appreciate you, Mr. Schutz.
Thank you.
Y'all be safe out there. Have a terrific weekend, and we'll talk to you on Monday.